Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome back to Nothing Major. On this week's episode, a lot went down in the tennis world. As everyone knows, we're going to touch on the Jannik Sinner 3-month suspension. We're going to talk about the U.S. Open mixed doubles, their new initiative, how to revamp that product. We're going to say goodbye to our good buddy, Diego Schwartzman. And we're also going to say hello to João, I think I got that right, Fonseca. As I mean, everyone knows him, yes, but he just won his first ATP title at 18 years old. Pretty impressive. The career path he seems to be on is meteoric. Is definitely a person to follow. And also on this pod, Tommy Paul Part 2 is coming out. I know you guys loved Part 1. We got more. So Tommy Paul Part 2 coming out on this pod. Welcome to Nothing Major, everyone. John Isner here, joined with, as always, Jack Sock, Sam Querrey, Stevie Johnson, a dapper-looking Stevie Johnson. I haven't seen you without a hat before. You got a nice collared shirt, like gel in the hair.
Thank you.
Perfectly manicured beard. Like, you look good, dude. So
thank you.
Kind of Ryan Reynolds
touché on that. Say what?
Like a little Ryan Reynolds fit and like look, I feel like.
Wow, yeah, the shirt, it's a good compliment.
That's a strong compliment. I appreciate that. That's the kind of motivation I need to get me going.
The lady on my, when I flew home last night on the Southwest, lady next to me thought I was Tony Romo. I was pretty pumped with that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't see that, but okay.
It was on the very last row of Southwest. She's like, are you Tony Romo? No, thank you.
Anyways, we're also, of course, joined by Charlie Fox and his team at SIF Creative. Thank you guys every single week putting up with us. So it's Monday. I was a participant in the Pickleball Slam 3, which was on ESPN, and Sam Querrey was on the call. And of course, I took another L. I told Sam yesterday that in televised wiffle ball matches, I think I'm 0-12 and took another L. And anyways, but actually the event I thought was pretty good. What did you think, Sam, from the announcing booth?
It was awesome. It was on ESPN yesterday for like a couple hours. I know when this comes out, it'll be like a week later. But it was at the Michelob Ultra Arena at Mandalay Bay. The teams were Andre Agassi, Steffi Graf, and Marty Fish against Andy Roddick, Jeannie Bouchard, and John Isner. It ended up going, like John said, to like this like super tiebreaker at the end in which Agassi, Graf, and Marty Fish won. But Agassi has won the Pickle Slam 3 years in a row. Like, Agassi can play pickleball. Like, Jack's seen him, played with him. Like, the dude can play for a 54-year-old guy. Like, he's a pickleball baller. And the event was good. I don't know what kind of, like, ratings it got, but it was good.
Yeah, it was good. The energy was good. I'm just curious if the Mandalay Bay executives and the ESPN executives are a little disappointed with having me be a part of it. I know Jack was a part of it last year. It brings a lot more flair and athleticism to the event than I can bring. But, you know, I lost some close matches. It's not like I got blown out. My team lost, but that's it. I'll probably be on play pickleball at some point on TV down the road, and I'll probably lose again. So I should be the one to you guys pick on, not Sam.
Thank you.
Yeah, but you don't claim to be a professional.
I don't claim to be a professional. All right, before we actually get in to actual tennis news, the followers of this pod, I'm sure a lot of our followers follow Sam Querrey just by himself on social and his big return. And Sam put out a really emotional Instagram post. You know, it was tugging at my heartstrings for sure. And it was one of those deals where like you could, the hair starts standing up on your arms. It was just so emotional. Very well done. The Sam Querrey pickleball comeback is on. The 37-year-old, off an Achilles tear. I like your chances, Jack. What do you think about Sam?
I think he's going to shock the world. I saw this video yesterday. I got motivated myself for the week here in Mesa. I've said it many times before the Achilles tear. I think he was about to go on a no pun intended, on a tear.
appreciate that. I'm gonna have an update for everyone next week. That'll be start of the pod next week, just how the comeback went, how the first round match went. So I will keep everyone updated. But Jack, I appreciate those nice words.
I will be there in person to watch. I will be there to support for sure.
All right. Thank you.
I'm going to be on the stream. Okay, no more pickleball talk. We're done. This is a tennis pod. I want to add one more thing before we dig into everything that happened last week. We're adding another day of our pod. So two drops. Monday is going to be a little quicker, and Friday is going to be a little longer. It's the nothing major that you guys know. There's a lot of big news. But we're going to start with our good buddy Diego, former pod guest. He's retiring. I don't know if you guys watched it on TV. He had a great win first round beating Nico Jarry. Body probably let him down after that. Hadn't been playing many matches, so that was to be expected. Went down easy in the second round. So what type of, I guess, legacy do you guys think Diego has left on the tour? I mean, it's a little, for me, I was surprised to see him retire. I mean, he's still young-ish, and he's not hurt or anything, but everyone goes out. We talked about it. Everyone goes out on their own terms. Jack, you and I know him very well. What do you think about Diego, and how amazing do you think it was for him to be able to do what he did, given his stature? I mean, he had an incredible career, top 10 player, so many accolades. We're going to praise Diego for the next 5 minutes here, and I want to start with you, Jack.
Yeah, we got to give him his flowers. He's a smaller guy in height. He's got to work extra hard, play longer points, play more physical. And I think probably because of that was maybe, I obviously have no idea, but maybe could have been part of the early-ish retirement that we kind of think about. Who knows how his body actually feels? None of us actually know, but I would assume the way he had to play for that many years and at that level against all these top guys, I'm assuming the body probably can't feel that great. He's kind of got to do a little more than others. But yeah, like you said, he's one of our good friends. We got to know him very well through Laver Cup for all the years and everything. And I think he was always one of the nicest dudes out there. I feel like he always had a smile on his face. And I think he did a lot for Argentinian tennis. It seemed like he was massive down there. They obviously have a great list of players before him and even now. But I think he did a lot for the sport there. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see him involved in tennis or Argentinian tennis going forward, even after this.
Diego is an absolute legend. On the court, off the court, the guy, I mean, for me at least, always walking into a locker room, seeing him at a tournament, wherever it may be, there was always a smile on his face. He was always happy, was just one of the best people to be around. And really, his tennis was incredible. To do it at his size, especially in, I would say, this generation, this era of tennis, where most of the guys are just big monsters who hit the absolute crap out of the ball. And he had to do it the hard way each and every week, every point, every set, you name it. I mean, I think John actually had more aces in his Mahout match than Diego probably had his entire career.
That's a good one to look up.
I mean, for him to never get free points and for him to make top 10, for him to excel as much as he did in the world of tennis is truly remarkable. And you know, in talking to him a little bit, you know, outside of this, the way he had to work and the way he had to prepare was absolutely insane. He knew he had to use his body every single point. And I think ultimately it just became too much for him. But to see him get to top 10, to see him accomplish all he did at his size, and you know, his tennis accomplishments are one thing, but him as a person, him as a ambassador for our sport, especially just being, you know, as fun as he is, you know, kudos to him. An awesome career, and very happy to see him win that last match and then get the send-off he proudly deserves down there in BA.
He's the man. He's got the respect from everyone on tour, and happy for him, and he's just the man. So well done, Diego.
Good points. Yeah, Stevie mentioned he retired in his hometown, Buenos Aires, so it was a great send-off for him. He had an incredible first-round win. That stadium was absolutely rocking when he won match point. That was really cool to see. That's something that he's going to take with him forever. Yeah, he was likely not going to win the tournament. He went down pretty easily, I think, 2-2 in the next round, but that memory of him winning his first round against someone ranked like 35 or 40 in the world.
Yeah, Jerry's really good.
Yeah, very good. Very good. There's another guy that Stevie talks about, like a big, tall guy, knocks the ball, and Diego spun his web from the back of the court and had a vintage win. So we're going to stick with Buenos Aires because I mentioned it earlier. João Fonseca won his first ATP title. 18 years, 5 months, and 26 days. So that makes him the 10th youngest player ever to win an ATP title. Leighton Hewitt, which is ridiculous, I didn't know this, won a title at 16 years and 10 months.
you know, you want to hear something sad for all of us? Zhao is the first player born in 2006 or later to win an ATP title.
Yeah, it's like 10 years after John graduated high school.
2006, dude.
That's I know. I mean, I was like, I turned, Sam, you were pro in 2006.
Yeah, that was my first year.
Yeah,
you're making me feel like I'm older than you. Well, you're older than me. What are you doing?
No. I know, but I'm just saying, I was pro in 2007 because I went to college. I'm just saying, you were on the pro tour when he was, so.
But you're older than me by like a few years.
I'm older than you by 2.5 years.
Clear.
Yes, I'm older than you by 2.5 years. But I'm just saying, you didn't go to college.
You chill.
My bad, dude. I don't know, I'm just trying to. All right, anyways, so we kind of, I think a lot of tennis fans saw this coming. He won the next gen in December. That was like mid-December. Won a challenger in Australia. Qualied in Australia. Beat Rublev in the first round. So he had a great start to the year. I mean, it all started with the next gen in Saudi Arabia mid-December. Obviously, no points on the line there. But everyone, I mean, the tennis world was watching that event. We saw how good he is and the potential he has. And now, fast forward a few months later, he wins his first ATP title in Buenos Aires. And now he gets to play in his home country at a 500. So, I don't know. Let's talk about – we did speak about it a little bit. Sam and I, you and I were the most bullish on his prospects at the end of the year, like where he's going to end ranking-wise. I guess, Sam, let's start with you. Like, is Joao a guy that's going to – like we're going to see like totally emerge and challenge the top two players in our sport? And when I say top two, I'm talking about Sinner and Alcaraz. I think a lot of tennis fans would like for that to be the case.
I think he is. Maybe not – right away, but he's not far off. I mean, take all those results away that you just mentioned. If you just watch him play tennis, like just the eyeball test says he is so good. The way he moves around the court, the way he hits the ball, backhand and forehand, he can absolutely rip it. He's like passionate about the way he plays. And he's just like on a tear right now. He's already the second favorite to win Rio this week. Yeah. Like the guy is flying high. He's so fun to watch. I've been saying this for months. It's not like this is breaking news. Like he's like my favorite player. Like to watch play tennis right now. I love watching him play. And yeah, I'm still bullish on him. I think John and I were saying like he'll be seated at the US Open. Like I even feel more strongly about that now after amazing week in Buenos Aires. And I'm excited to like tune in and just watch him play the rest of his life.
Yeah. I think he's shown he's winning a title on clay. He's obviously beaten Rublev, one of the best players in the world on hard courts in Australia. He clearly is a very versatile player. He's, like you said, he strikes the ball incredibly well. Seems to have a lot out there. Seems comfortable with the net. Seems, obviously, he's ridiculous from the baseline. And, yeah, his attitude out there seems awesome, especially for a young guy. Seems just ultra positive. Doesn't seem like much affects him, which is highly impressive.
And if you look at the other youngest champions to ever win tournaments, Hewitt, Andre Medvedev, Nishikori, Nadal, Hewitt, Alcaraz, Chang, and now Fonseca. Like, he's on a list of guys that are, like, basically, like, Hall of Famers. So it's a pretty special list he's on already.
The only thing I would add to his incredible week, he beat 4 Argentinian guys in Buenos Aires, in Argentina, in their home country. Like, that is not easy to do. That is, like, just really impressive. To do, I mean, he's 18 years old and he's got the moxie and the composure of somebody much older. So I'm excited to see him get to Rio and play in his home country. Hopefully he can have a couple hours of downtime, you know, from the praise and the media and all that stuff so he can prepare for that tournament. So that could be a tough turnaround for him potentially in his home country just with everything surrounding it. But getting onto some friendly confines, I think he's going to have hopefully another deep week because he is electric to watch.
All of us know how rabid like Argentinian fans are, and like the highlights I was watching, my take was that they weren't like, yes, they were cheering for their guys, but they appreciated Fonseca's game so much that he was also had like a lot of crowd support because he's that much fun to watch. I mean, his forehand, as Sam, you said, he passes the eyeball test. His forehand certainly does. The thing is an absolute rocket for like not like a big guy, right? Like he's kind of blessed with something in his arm. He's got this racketed speed like Jack, like you had, like this ridiculous racketed speed. He's just got a lot of talent, clearly works hard. And I think he made, I don't know what about you guys, I think he made the right choice not going to the University of Virginia. What do you
think? I don't know. You think playing national indoors or winning a 250 the same week? I mean,
it almost seems crazy that he even entertained the idea of going to Virginia at this point.
Yeah.
I think it was a good backup plan, potentially.
Yeah. Shout out to On Running. They're pretty good about the players they...
They haven't missed.
They haven't missed. They have
big shot. I don't know one player that's like not good that they have.
Yeah, they have like the trendy Italian guy, yep. Cabali. Yeah. And now they have Fonseca.
Ben Shelton and Świątek.
Doesn't matter. They have Roger.
Good list.
You think Roger's like official title is like head of scouting or something? Head of talent evaluation?
Yeah, he was at the Les Petit Os in France, yeah, scouting 14.
Roger's like the regional manager of On talent scouting.
Sending products to everyone.
He's got his business card out.
Oh, man. I bet he does have some say.
It'd be great if Fonseca texts Roger, like, hey, can I get a few extra pairs of shoes sent down to Rio?
Oh, gosh. They get caught in customs. It always happens to us. You get something, you try to get something sent internationally, this wouldn't come.
Ever.
The biggest news of everything that went down last week is the Sinner suspension. And Medvedev's quote after his loss, he was asked about Sinner, of course, as all the top guys have been asked. He says, I hope that the next few times the players will be able to do that. WADA will say, we found an anti-doping rule violation, and you get 2 years. And you say, no, I want 1 month. Then he continues. So I hope that will create a precedent where everyone will have the opportunity to defend themselves better than before. Otherwise, it's not going to be possible. It's going to be bizarre. Thought that was interesting from Medvedev. Stan Wawrinka, former pod guest, had a tweet, a bit of a zinger of a tweet that got a lot of traction. I don't know if you guys saw that. He posted that on X. So Sinner gets 3 months. Going back to actually like what happened. So initially, obviously, he failed a drug test. And the ITIA came in. They started investigating it. And they ruled no fault or negligence on his part. So they cleared him of basically any wrongdoing. And then WADA comes in and they tried to say, we're not happy with that. We want to get our pound of flesh. So WADA reopens the case. They start litigating it. And what essentially happened is this is like pretty much a plea deal. I don't know what went down. I mean, maybe Sinner and his team thought that if this was litigated all the way to the end, they could win. But in my mind, Yannick did not want that hanging over him as he continued to play and continue to play and possibly risk the chance of being suspended for 1 or 2 years. So they negotiated, which was a plea deal, 3 months, which in my mind, I mean, that amount of time like seems about right, and Sinner and his team are not happy. They're okay with that. The timing obviously is on his side. He is missing big tournaments. So he's not missing a slam, yes, but he's missing four Masters series. So he's missing a lot of big tournaments. But I think from Sinner's point of view, like, I'll take the 3 months, and I want this behind me forever and ever. And it's always going to be hanging over him. People are always going to talk about it, but he's not going to be playing with the possible weight or burden of him looking at a 1 to 2 year suspension. I do believe that if this was litigated to the end, him and his team thought that he could be cleared completely and with no suspension at all, but they negotiated 3 months. He went ahead and took it. At least mentally, it's going to help him recover. And, you know, he's going to be in the mix. We know that. So it's the timing. I think everyone is concerned about the fact that this went down sort of kind of randomly, like out of the blue. We didn't know it was going to happen right then and there. Doesn't miss any Grand Slams. Gets to play in Rome. He was in Doha practicing when this went down. So it leads me to believe that he didn't even know it was coming down right then and there, because why would he be practicing in Doha? So Sinner gets 3 months. Stevie, go ahead. Talk about it. The floor is yours. What do you think about the whole situation?
I think it just, all of it smells fishy to me. I don't want to get into innocent, guilty, whatever he did. We've talked about it on this podcast before. Whether he did or he didn't, that's not up to me to decide. I have no idea how the testing works. You know, none of us really do. What I don't care for is, you know, the saga that this went through, the ups and the downs, the somewhat favorable treatment I felt as if he got from his position, whether that be his name recognition, his ranking, his legal team getting the things done. And then, you know, with all of this hanging over tennis as a whole, with the suspension, is it going to happen? You name it. He ultimately does get a suspension. And it's just sometimes as an outsider now, even if I was in the sport, it just seems off and it seems a bit suspicious that he gets suspended arbitrarily for 3 months and he doesn't miss any tournaments. He comes back the day before, 2 days before Rome gets to go. So he gets to play his home Master Series. He doesn't miss any slams.
I think it's sorry, we can bleep that out. I think it's the whole thing is ridiculous to me. I don't think you can have a Mikael Yimmer type player who basically gets suspended for a year or two and has to retire from the sport because he missed three tests. And then you have a player, just because he's a top player, fail a drug test and only get 3 months. It doesn't, none of it makes sense to me because you didn't show up to the right, you know, location three times and you're out for 2 years compared to 3 months for failing a thing. And then the whole blaming it on the team. You're the main piece of the team. You also need to be in the know of what's going on. It just seems, yeah, like Stevie said, seems very fishy.
I don't think most players are actually mad or disappointed with Sinner. I think they're disappointed with, like, WADA or the drug testing as a whole. It's like the inconsistency of it, that timing. I think you're right, Stevie. It needs some type of overhaul or some type of way to, like, make the rules a little more black and white. Easier said than done. Every situation is case by case. But you're right. It just seemed a little too convenient. He gets to come back and play Rome. He's still going to be ranked number one in the world. If you're Sinner, it's great, right? You kind of get this. You get to move on with it. You don't have to deal with this, like, saga anymore. And so I'm assuming he's loving the end result of this. But ultimately, just WADA is the one that comes out looking like a loser in this whole thing.
I think we need a complete overhaul of the drug testing system, the rules, because it is not fair from top to bottom, from the suspension side of things, from the testing side of things. So, you know, whether he did or he didn't do it, that's way out of my pay grade. I just don't like that the suspension comes now for 3 months. He just misses a couple Master Series. He gets to play Rome. He gets to play the French Open. He gets to play Wimbledon. And that part just, I don't like. It just, something doesn't smell right to me about that. But that's just my opinion.
I'm a huge fan. Yannick Sinner is an incredible tennis player. It's nothing against him and all of it. But I just think the convenience and the favoritism is a bit much for me.
I still think he is the best tennis player by far. And with all this hanging over him, it's, you know, again, like, whatever it's not up to me to decide, but, you know, hopefully that this kind of puts stuff to bed. But I'd like there to just be a complete overhaul of just the drug testing system and kind of the threshold of top to bottom, how we deal with things from, you know, because we've had a lot of different cases with, you know, just if we're going backwards, Sharapova, Halep, you know, Sinner, like, guys that have missed, and girls that have missed time for things that potentially they shouldn't have missed time for. So hopefully this can kind of lead to some change and some positive light, just because it just seems a little too convenient sometimes with their rulings.
Yep, sure.
All right. So one somewhat controversial topic to now another. A lot of players on social media, in particular doubles players, were not happy with the U.S. Open decision to completely nix mixed doubles as it currently stands. Like an event during the 2 weeks of the tournament, what they are doing is they are starting the mixed doubles event, for those who don't know, the week before the U.S. Open. So all the top players, all the most marketable players on the men's and the women's side are going to be in New York, training and practicing ahead of the U.S. Open. So the U.S. Open is putting on a mixed doubles event, a shortened format. They're playing to four, is that right? Two out of three sets to four.
Till the final.
And, yep, 16 teams. You actually can enter, like, you on your rankings, you get in. There's 8 wild cards. The winning team gets $1 million, and they're obviously going to sell a ton of tickets for this. The doubles players are...
They don't sell tickets, Fan Week. I think it's free, no? I think it's just free to entry during Qualies Week.
Yeah, we don't. All right. This maybe is different, though. This is on Ash.
I don't know.
They play on Ash and Louis, so I don't know if that's
just curious. Different.
No, I don't know. You sound. Yeah. I don't know.
It's going to be open unless you want a ticket on Ash or Louis Armstrong, but we are going to get to the bottom of that.
We're going to find that out. I was under the impression that, yes, like tickets will be sold for this. But in any event, it's going to be a great spectacle because we don't know who's going to be playing right now. There's going to be 16 teams, and a lot of the top players are going to want to play. It's good practice. It's not too taxing on your body, and the winning team walks away with $1 million. Sam, you wrote that you want to talk about this right now. What do you think about the new rule change, the new format? Do you think the doubles players have a right to have any, I guess, beef right now with this decision?
No, the doubles players can shut up. This is like the greatest initiative in tennis in like 10 years. This is unbelievable, this event. All the top players are in New York already, Tuesday, Wednesday. I bet there's going to get, I mean, like you said, there's 8 teams that are going to get on their ranking and then 8 teams that are getting a wild card. I bet there's going to be 50 wildcard teams that are going to apply for this. This is like the coolest event we've ever seen. Indian Wells and a few other events do those kind of like mixed doubles, one night only things, and they're packed. Like, I don't know what players are going to play this. I don't know if like Alcaraz, you know, Sinner, Sabalenka, Coco Gauff are going to play, but I bet some of them do. And I bet they're going to be into it, and they're playing for $1 million, and it's going to be fun, and it's on ESPN, and like, can anyone tell me who won the mixed doubles last year at the U.S. Open? No. The answer is no. Or the year before? No, you can't. But when this is going on,
I can tell you who won in 2010.
But when this is going on, like, people are going to remember this. Like, the first week of the tournament, people are going to be like, oh, you know what? Like, Badosa and Tsitsipas or, like, Alcaraz and Sabalenka won this event. It's unbelievable. I can't wait for it. I'm also so jealous that we didn't have this when we played.
It's not $1 million winner take all. There's prize money at each round.
Everyone's so getting like, 50 grand just to show up.
Exactly, exactly. So I think everyone's going to play again because it's just another way to practice. It's not taxing on your body. You're playing sets to four and doubles. Like, give me a break.
And no
like,
ad.
No ad. Like, it's not something.
And 10
like,
point breakers.
I mean, maybe Novak is like, I don't want to play that. I maybe understand that. But I think everyone else is going to play because it's a way to practice. And look, if I win the thing, they're going to add 500 grand to my prize money check at the end of the tournament. That's pretty nice. Jack, what do you think about it?
Cool. Can I add one thing? They also have eight wild cards. But maybe Serena takes a wild card. Maybe like Rafa. Maybe there's like someone like that like gets a wild card too.
Yeah.
All right, you can go now, Jack.
No. I'll say I might even apply for a wild card now.
You should.
I can play. Yeah. I wish this was going on when we were playing. As the probably more consistent half quarter in the group here, I would have loved to do this. I would have loved to try to win this type of money playing mixed doubles. Matches are probably going to be 30, 40 minutes long, maybe. Agree with Sam. If you're a top 8 team in doubles, kudos to you. You can get in. No one knows who you are after that anyways. No one cares.
No, you can't get in. You only get in based on your singles ranking.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. No doubles. Like,
that's good. I think
Nicola Mektic is not playing this event.
Oh, no. So Salisbury is going to be heated. All right. So yeah, okay, that makes it even better. Yeah, I think this will be fun. I think the people are gonna love it. The fans are gonna love it. That week is already the amount of people that come out and watch Qualies and guys practice anyways, you guys have said it all now. I didn't know that. I thought the doubles guys are still getting in, so that makes it even funnier. I think it's gonna be a star studded lineup. Like you said, maybe Novak doesn't play or something, but wouldn't be surprised you get a bunch of players from the same country, guy and girl, like a fun. It might even be probably like a United Cup on steroids type of thing with so I don't know. I think it'll be sick. The money's fantastic. Like I said, would have loved that in 2010. That would have been better cash than I got. But it would have been it'd be a lot of fun. So good on the US Open. Like Sam said, amazing initiative. Yeah, very excited to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I would just say quickly that I think Stacey Allister, Eric Buderak, and the people at the U.S. Open and the USTA were listening to John Isner's commissioner of tennis pitch a few months ago. Although they did get the week wrong, they're not going to stay for the second week. This is impressive. I like this. Guys, like we're a bit harsh on doubles players here on the tour. Mixed doubles doesn't sell tickets. Nobody goes to watch the mixed doubles. So this is a chance for all the singles players to get match time or practice time on Ash, get some live reps in a very unserious, unstressful situation. So kudos to them. I think this is here to stay. This has made a lot of doubles players very angry. But ultimately, I think this is a fantastic move for the sport. So kudos to John Isner for the thought on this process. I just got the week wrong, but yes.
Yeah, I did get the week wrong. It was always, you know, subject to
impressive.
Change. But I think doubles, and especially mixed doubles, is a very compelling product if you have the right players out there. And I think some of the doubles players were mad. I think some people said, oh, you're just making this an exhibition. Well, mixed doubles was an exhibition.
Correct.
There's no ranking points on the line. There's no mixed doubles rankings out there. So, I mean, isn't that by definition an exhibition? If you're just playing for cash? Because that's what they're doing. I mean, the prestige of a... If you think that's prestigious, you know, to be a Grand Slam champ. And by the way, I think we're trying to get the answer to the question. And while one of y'all were talking, I actually texted Budorak and he got back to me. And so he said, this is what we have. We'll probably do a combination of sold and free tickets, but haven't decided yet. Fan Week is always meant to be free and affordable, so the US Open is not changing that, but tickets will be made available accordingly. Says the goal is to completely pack the place. And Eric Budorak, for the listeners of the pod, I don't know who Eric Budorak is, which some of you might not. What makes it actually very interesting was a lifetime doubles player. Never played singles on the tour. He played Division III college tennis and had a great doubles career. Was a great player, a good friend of ours. I think a bunch of us, I definitely played doubles with him. I don't know about you guys. I think you did, Sam. Great guy. So he is the senior director of player relations and business development at the USTA, at the US Open. So a lot of this initiative is coming from him, coming from a doubles guy. So he sees the value in getting the stars together and aligned for this event. I'm with Sam. I like it. Actually, I love it. And I'm very jealous that this wasn't an option in 2015 when me, Jack, Sam, Stevie were all top 20 in the world and could have participated in an event like this, but not going to be that grumpy old guy. It's going to be great. The fans are going to love it. I mean, if you just, hypothetically, if Coco Gauff is playing mixed doubles with Novak Djokovic, I'm just making
whoever,
Taylor,
I mean,
Fritz, doesn't matter. Like, people are going to watch that.
Are.
And it's going to be great. So as I said, doubles is a very compelling product with the right talent out on the court. And that's what the US Open sees. And I think it'll be great. All right. Now it's time for Tommy Paul part two. We interviewed Tommy in the off season at some point in December. So this was before he cracked into the top 10, but he was tracking to get there. So Tommy Paul, top 10 player, heartthrob. Part two coming up on Nothing Major.
We got one more segment. It's like kind of like fun, quick answers, confessions.
Confessions.
They're tennis confessions.
Scary.
Don't worry.
Okay.
What's your biggest tennis win?
Alcaraz.
So what about second best?
Medvedev.
I thought you were going to say Jack Sock in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for.
I got my cheeks clapped in that match. I got my cheeks clapped. I think I lost in like 41 minutes.
That was one of my better matches, though, for sure. I didn't miss one ball that night.
One match you wish you could have back.
I played Felix at Indian Wells, round of 16. 2 years ago, I think. I think I had like four, maybe five match points and lost 7-6 in the third. That one hurt.
What does Tommy Paul do after losing a tough match?
I mean, same we do after we win, right? Go to the locker room, shower, stretch, and treatment. Get some dinner and go to the next tournament.
What a professional.
So professional. I thought, you know, like go to Applebee's, slam some margaritas. And
go to Applebee's.
That's part of the stuff that's different from when I was 21, you know?
Exactly.
A new leaf.
Player you hate to play the most?
Until this year, I struggled with Kecmanovic. I mean, I lost to him in Australian Open 6-0 in the fifth set, which sucked. And then I played him at Stockholm this year. That was like first time actually beating him. He for some reason, I really didn't like playing him very much.
Was that year in Australia? Was that the year that Novak taken out of the draw?
It was this year, like 2024.
He beat you twice in the Australian Open though, didn't he? Or am I completely imagining that?
John's always factually correct.
Is this an Isner fact?
Yeah, John rolls off facts and he's wrong on all of them. Like every episode.
Yeah.
Being very confident about stuff and being dead wrong at the same time.
You're actually right. 22 and 24.
Yes. And Djokovic was taken out of the draw. And I remember like, you were in the top section
of
the draw.
Yeah, Djokovic.
Good opportunity. And he beat you. Yeah.
And then also Cerundolo. Me and Cerundolo have great matches, but he's got me in some big ones.
Hmm.
Would you rather win a gold medal with Taylor Fritz at the Olympics, or final the U.S. Open in singles?
Oh, man.
Ooh.
It's a spicy one.
Final the U.S. Open.
Yeah, good job. Good answer.
Yeah, it's a good answer. It's the right answer. Yeah.
I feel like it wasn't that hard, but, you know, I wanted to make it seem like it was a tough one.
Keep it on the Olympics theme a little bit. Where do you put bronze medal doubles? Where does that rank?
I don't know about that.
You can say it doesn't mean anything. It's all good. We've made fun of the Olympics on this pod.
I would say top 10.
At the end of your career, it's going to be top 35.
Hopefully.
All right, Tommy. Rank us 1 to 4 favorite to least favorite to play against.
Least favorite is John.
Yes.
Never got the goat bot.
Why? Because I just make so many balls and just suffocate you from the baseline? Is that
you're 3-0 against
no,
him, John.
No, because in Newport, that serve that I hit in the breaker.
Oh, yes.
And they
wait, the one I broke you on?
He doesn't remember that now. Look at that.
John doesn't know.
No, I would return bot against Tommy for some reason. Like, please explain. I don't remember this, actually.
There was a serve at, like, 4-5 in the breaker in the third that I hit a serve. And, like, it could have been out. But if it was out, it was by, like, this much. And I challenged it. And they said it missed by, like, 7 feet. Like, it showed my... showed the review and showed I missed by 7 feet, and then I roll a second serve in and you go bam, winner, mini break, match over.
I actually do remember that. I was pretty certain it was in.
It was close.
I was getting ready to go to the deuce side at 5-all on the breaker, and it showed it was out by like a 2 feet.
It was definitely close. It could have been in, could have been a little bit out, but the review just made me feel terrible about it.
I thought you were talking about that return a serve I hit. I hit like the best return of my life, and it was in by a hair.
No, I remember that, but like, I think that one was definitely in. I just wasn't sure about that point. I mean, the mini break in the third set breaker was tough, you know? Sam, we never played, so I'm going to put
my
you-
My eyes were
gonna
high.
I'm going to put you second, just because we never played, and respect there.
It was unfair. He beat me in 30 minutes, so I'm going to for sure be fourth.
I don't know. I'm going to go...
Don't do me like that, dude.
This is all of us in our prime. This is all of us in our primes. You got to go with that.
All right, prime. Then I'm going the sock, and then Stevie.
Yeah, I get that a lot on this podcast. That's pretty. It's true.
I'm gonna put you on the spot again. If you had to take one of us from this podcast to coach you in Australia, who would it be?
Goatbot, for sure. I mean, we're gonna do. Dude, wait.
Yes, thank you.
We're gonna do Cabo. So
I'm gonna put you on the spot. I gotta coach you at some point in your career. It could be just one tournament. It could be Cabo in a few years.
Probably be the Dallas Open.
Let's do it.
Could be Dallas.
Let's go Houston.
Houston.
Ooh, good one.
Great one.
Yeah. Easy for you.
I'll drive up.
Easy for you.
Just pay for my gas money and we're good.
Oh, so free week.
Free week, dude. Absolutely.
Got two titles there, dude. Come on.
Call Brad right now.
All right. Tell Brad I'm in.
You got to take one shot from the group. You can't take a serve. One shot from the four of us to add to your game. What do you want?
All right, sock forehand.
It's not that good.
No, whoa! What?
No, I'm pretty.
It's
clearly
it's
is.
I think the correct answer should be socks volleys, though.
Like volleys as a whole, you can take both sides.
Yeah, his net game probably is like, you know.
I'm still going with sock forehand. I don't mind my volleys.
Yeah.
I feel like Tommy's net game is good.
Yeah, I don't mind my volleys. Like, not as good as socks, quick, but like I can manage up there.
Yeah, you serve in volley sometimes. A little too much, honestly.
Yeah.
Sometimes you do. I'm like, what's this guy doing?
Whoa!
Too much?
I think not enough.
What do you think,
you
John?
You come in casual. Good. You got to, like, get low and, like, stick volley. You're, like, so casual to serve in volley sometimes.
Yeah, we're working on that.
I love that.
I'm just trying to just get in the jump Isner to get picked for the coaching.
You're trying to get in the coaching conversation. I get it.
I see some things that could be changed.
We'll talk.
All right, last one. How do you rate Riley's fashion sense? Give us your honest answer. We did not have this in the script.
Let's do this. 1 to 10. 10 being like he has incredible fashion sense. He looks great. 1 being he looks like a homeless man under the freeway. What are you giving him?
I'll give him like an 8. I think he does well for himself. Like I wouldn't wear it. I think if I wore anything that he wore, I would look ridiculous. But like he pulls it off. So he's got an 8 from me.
He's confident in it.
Yeah.
Last thing. Rank you, Fritz, Francis Tiapo, Shelton, and Opelka, worst to best sense of fashion.
I'm going to go, wait, Riley?
So give us who's worst and then like work your way up to like the best fashion person.
I'm the worst. Faux. Fritz, Ben, Riley.
That's a good list, yeah. That's a good list.
You make everything look good, Tommy. It doesn't matter what you wear.
No, I just wear like, I wear like my friend's clothes. Like this is Phil's company, and then I wear my girlfriend's clothes. I just wear whatever comes to the house, you know?
You're the complete antithesis of a bot, by the way, so enjoy that.
You text me? No, you gotta tell them how much you text me about every time I like am serving for a match and I get broken. You're the first person that texts me. Like, you're such a bot. You're such a bot.
Because he's just such a bot. Like, just serve it out, dude. Like, you know, 5-4 in the third. Like, you know.
It's not that easy, John.
This is what you want as a coach?
You always get broken, and then you break back and win 7-5. That's something I never did in my whole entire life. But and every time I watch you play, when you get broken, like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to go make a sandwich. He's going to break serve next. And sure enough, you do every single time.
Go make a sandwich.
Go make a sandwich.
When I'm serving for a set or serving for a match, I'm literally thinking about you texting me after the match is over. I know it's coming.
Absolutely. Every time I'm watching you, you always fail to serve out a match, but you break the very next game.
Hey, as long as we get it done, right?
You get it done.
All right, Tommy. Thanks, kid.
Appreciate it, TP.
See you, boys.
Thank you, Tommy, Paul, TP, for your time. Appreciate you coming on the pod. Everyone has really, really enjoyed it. We can't do this pod and not mention the unbelievable traction we got on Sam Querrey's idea. He led the charge on this one, on the ATP Tour Hot Guy tournament. And so we have an update. I mean, we posted it. We had a lot of people write in, a lot of people wondering how they're going to vote for, you know, round by round winners. So Sam, why don't you talk through how it was drafted and, you know, talk about some of the player reactions we got as well, because we tagged a bunch of players and we had some people respond in.
Incredible.
I think it was a great draw. I think, because you made the draw, right? You were the commissioner for this. I think you made it a little too top heavy. The draw was a little bit unbalanced, but nonetheless, fantastic idea. People are loving it. And I think all of us can't wait to see the results. But Sam, go ahead, talk about it a little more.
So we're doing the segment. I kind of was in the group chat like, hey, here's 16 hot guys. I just kind of threw them in the group chat. Let me know if you guys want to take some out or add some. No one said anything, so I just went with those that group of guys. And then I just kind of like winged it and made the seeds, like kind of one through 15, and then wild card for Kukushkin. I think John was the one who had the Kukushkin wild card initiative.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of made the draw randomly. I didn't want to do the 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, because in tennis, that's not how it works. It's 1 and 2,
like
then they
NCAA
flip a coin.
Basketball. Yeah.
Yeah, and so...
pulled some chips out of a hat.
Made that draw, put it in the group chat, said, hey, how do you guys like this? Again, no one really said anything. You guys didn't want to switch anything around. And
felt good with it.
All right, yeah, you guys were good with the draw. And so, yeah, then the draw took a life of its own. We posted it, a lot of feedback. Tommy was commenting on it. Felix, I feel bad for not maybe putting Felix in the field. We can do another one next year.
I mean, I got bodied by Berrettini.
Stevie mentioned that
Berrettini, put me in a body bag.
Berrettini's legs maybe aren't the best feature of his body, and Berrettini just went at you with an unbelievable gift.
I will say, kudos to him. I was on the ground rolling in laughter when I saw him post that. I think my wife thought I was an absolute psychopath. She thought something was wrong, but kudos to him. That might live on it forever in my brain, in the world. Like, that was an unbelievable gif to GIF, whatever you want to call it. And kudos to the players. Fantastic.
It's a GIF.
GIF? GIF?
It's a GIF.
How do you know?
It's a GIF. It's a GIF.
It's a GIF.
Wait, you just said it's both, Jack. Which one?
I know. I was just...
Nobody knows.
No one knows. Yeah.
Nobody knows.
GIF.
And for context, it was a SpongeBob one, which was...
Yeah. Hilarious.
Anyway, the players loved it. It, like, made its way around. I think players were more into that draw than they were, like, Marseille, Buenos Aires, and Del Rey, quite frankly.
It was a good time to release it, Sam. Like, you were spot on. We released it on Valentine's Day, and we released it during the... 3 ATP 250 week. I think it was a good time to release. A little bit of a sleepy time in the schedule before Fonseca took his first title.
We're going to let people know how we're going to actually do the voting on this. We are going to do voting, and we're going to come up. That draw is going to be completed at some point, and we're going to let people know who the hottest guy is.
I'm a little unclear how the voting is going as well, but we will let everyone know. Yeah, we can't wait to see the end results. It's going to be great. Berrettini's got a good draw.
Does have a good draw.
Yeah, I did. Maybe the top half's a little heavy, but what are you going to do? That's a draw. You never know how it's going to shake out.
you never know how it's going to shake out. That's exactly right. Touch on really quick the segment that Stevie has to now complete because he lost to Sam with one Achilles in a pickleball singles match. So Stevie, as everyone knows, has to direct message five players of, I guess, our choosing. A lot of our fans sent in a list. So we're going to choose the five. And actually, as a little caveat, Stevie, I want one of the five. I want you to go Euro voice note.
I won't
to
do
one
it.
Of them.
No, why I won't not? Do it. I refuse to do European voice notes. I just refuse to do it.
Yeah, but you lost.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to do that. I will send DMs. I will not lose my character over a European DM.
Like a 90-second voice
I will not
note.
Do a voice note, no.
All right. Way to fight the peer pressure there.
Yeah,
all right. You're going to direct message Medvedev. We all like him. Federer. All really like him. Matthew McConaughey. Ben Stiller. And Serena Williams. You're going to DM those five people. I don't think you're going to get a single response. But anyways, yes, so that's what you're going to do, Stevie. So what do you think about that that list?
I'm excited. And I think I said it last week. I think the over-under is like 0.5 on responses. So
yeah.
I think there's one possibility that I get a response. That's it. Like, legitimately, I think Medvedev might be the only one that there's a slight chance. But I'm gonna take five swings and hope I connect on one of them. Just get above
Dude,
the
I
Mendoza
think you
line.
Have Medvedev and Ben Stiller. I think that he's like active on, I mean, on X, and I feel like, and he loves tennis, obviously. And I think, I mean, if John knows him pretty well, but I think there's a slight chance for Ben Stiller as well. With Medvedev.
I love his show Severance, by the way. That'd be unbelievable if he were. I think of all that, well, they're all great. So if anyone says yes, it'll be a big boon for the pod. But I'm with Stevie. I think Medvedev's most likely. Then probably Stiller after that. No shot, McConaughey. Hadn't Sam already reached out to Medvedev? So this is going to be nothing.
So that's the thing is I could, you know, we could work around. I could try the Instagram. I could try and get his phone number. You know, there's a couple ways about it, but I feel like he's my only likely response.
I think phone number, WhatsApp, voice note.
No.
Wait.
Phone number, WhatsApp, message. Sure.
Do we think if we what do you call it? If you exit somebody, or if you tweet it, I think if we tweet at Ben Stiller, or exit Ben Stiller, it might be a better opportunity there than maybe Insta DM. He's very active, I feel like, on X with, and like replies to people and.
Yeah. Yes, we might. Just keep that in mind.
That's a good point.
So next week we will have either some responses or no responses, and
the messages will be out there.
The messages will be out into the world, and then we'll just have to tag them all, just like we did with Stan, and you know, peer pressure them into coming on one way or the other.
We should have done the punishment is you have to put it on your story, like do like the black screen story and like write out the message. That way everybody sees it because now nobody will see your DM.
Oh, no, I can share them all. That's no problem. Yeah.
It's like a public.
I'll share them all.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
All right.
Who do we think is least likely to respond?
Serena.
Man, Serena or McConaughey?
Yeah.
Yeah, McConaughey. Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, I think Roger might. If he sees it. No, I'm just saying, if he sees it, but I say there's a 99.9% chance he doesn't see it. Do you get what I'm saying or no?
Please zoom in on Jack's face.
It was pretty good. No, I'm saying if he saw it, he would respond to you or Jack. I think he would respond to any of us if he saw it, but I don't think he's ever going to. It's going to go into his spam inbox folder and like they'll never see it. So
it'll never say just seen underneath that.
No, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
All right, that's it for another episode of Nothing Major. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. We got a few exciting announcements, one of which is we actually are going to drop some merch. I never thought we'd get to this point, but some people amazingly have asked for it. Jack, on his own, made these hats like 6-9 months ago, shipped them to us, and so we wear these a lot on the pod. And you know, some of our fans like the merch, so we are actually going to drop some, and we're going to be taking pre-orders on our website when that gets up and running, which will be very soon.
And to be clear, it won't be that hat that will be on there. It's going to.
I don't think so.
I'm just like, this is for the listeners. That was just my, you know, rough draft. Just wanted something for us to wear on here, and so. It'll look better than that, more professional than that.
I like this look, but you did a good job with it, Jack. Okay, here's our trivia, and we'll all try to chip in and get this. So we talked about Fonseca winning the Buenos Aires title, his first ever ATP title. So he is the youngest South American ATP Tour finalist since 2001. Who was that player? We're doing multiple choice. I think I know the answer here.
I feel like because of the way it was presented, I think.
Yeah. I'm gonna say Gaston Gaudio.
Okay, we'll go. Our choices are French. Guillermo Cañas, Jose Acasuso, Guillermo Coria, and Gaston Gaudio.
I'm gonna go with Jose Acasuso.
I'm gonna say Gaston Gaudio.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Gaudio as well with Stevie.
We're probably both wrong.
Let's see. Probably both wrong.
It's Jose Acasuso.
Acasuso!
It was the way it was asked. He goes, this one's really hard, so we have to go multiple choice. So I want the least likely answer and name, which is.
But I'm thinking Akasuka, like 2001, I thought he was like.
Yeah, he's the old noggin.
Yeah. Touche.
28 in 2001 or something. I don't know what I'm missing there.
Good one, Jack.
Thank you. I was 9 years old. I was 9 years old and tuning into South American tennis at that time.